you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance with your host, Nick Urban. Today, we're covering one of the most overlooked facets of health that sorely needs more attention and conversation. I firmly believe that health starts in the mouth. Yet a while back, we divorced dentistry from the rest of medicine. Big mistake, since that seems to have relegated its importance in the general consensus to second tier. And now research into this area is decades behind the rest of medicine. It seems that the modern dental arsenal consists of nothing more than brushing and flossing. But this generic advice hasn't solved much and is reactive rather than proactive. So I was excited when I connected with our guest this week to discuss the new frontier of the oral microbiome and how their platform is personalizing oral care recommendations to every individual. Brian Maurer started his career in genomics at the DNA sequencing company Illumina. There, he was on the ground floor of the genomics revolution that is taking place in healthcare and beyond. Brian got to work with some of the most cutting-edge scientists and companies innovating in areas like oncology, synthetic biology, CRISPR, and more. He co-founded Bristol a year ago with the mission of leveraging genomics technology to fundamentally change how we understand and practice oral health. The show notes for this one will be at mindbodypeak/44, and you can connect with Bristol at bristlehealth.com or at bristlehealth on the social media platforms. Brian inspired me, so after our conversation, I picked up my own Bristol kit, submitted a saliva sample, and got my personalized results. And I'll do a quick walkthrough at the end of this conversation in case you're interested. And if you want to pick up your own kit, you can do so with the Mind Body Peak Performance listener discount, Urban, to save 15%. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Brian Maurer. Tonight, we've got Brian Maurer on the show. Brian is a co-founder of Bristol. Brian, welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. We'll start off with the easy question, the warm-up that I give all guests. So far today, what unusual or non-negotiable things have you done for your health and performance?
Yeah. So the non-negotiables I've done, first is making sure I got a good night's sleep. So I've been really focused on sleep lately because I've just realized what an impact it can have on productivity. The other thing is getting outside early in the morning. So one nice part of being in Southern California is it affords me some vitamin D early and getting some sort of cardio in as well. It's usually either biking, swimming, or running. So I'd say those are kind of the three for the morning to get going.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any specific tactics or tricks around there? Is it like a standardized routine?
I think as standardized as I'm going to get. I try to set the routines, but it's normally try to get to bed early, try to cut down the screen time as much as we can in this day and age, but I can't say I'm doing great there. But wake up and then just immediately before I check my phone or get onto email, try to get my bathing suit on or get outside, get the running shoes and try to get some sort of productivity in before my brain gets filled with the day.
I like that. And counterintuitively, Andrew Huberman, a researcher, professor out of Stanford, his lab has shown that when you get out and you get early morning light exposure like that, you're setting yourself up for a good night's sleep. Mm-hmm. It starts all the way opposite end of the wake cycle.
Everything with the circadian rhythm research lately, I think is so interesting. And I think that might've been it, because I heard a podcast about you want to get sunlight, take off your sunglasses in the morning, really kick that process off.
And previously in this show, we interviewed a chronobiologist named Greg Potter, and he went down into all the circadian cues that tell your body what time of day it is and basically reset your circadian rhythm, either for the good if you do it at the right time, or if you do certain things like are exposed to bright light at night, it can have the opposite effect and tell your body it's daytime, which interferes with all the processes that are supposed to happen during sleep.
Yeah, I think anyone who's brought their laptop or left their phone on too bright in bed can, can attest that you're probably not, if you look at your Whoop or your whatever data you're wearing for your sleep, it's typically not that good.
Yeah, I wear an Aura, so I can confirm that's the case.
You got the best.
Mm-hmm. So now let's hear a little bit about your background. How did you get started with Bristle and genomics? Maybe you want to elaborate a bit on what Bristle is.
Yeah, so Bristle is an at-home oral health platform. We offer a test that analyzes a user's saliva and specifically looks at their oral microbiome to assess their oral health status, then matches them with diet, product, and lifestyle recommendations to improve their health. I did not expect myself to end up to go into genomics or oral health. So it's kind of a funny story there. The genomics piece, I went to school at University of San Diego. San Diego has a massive biotech scene. And it really started, my mom one day had heard like an NPR piece. I was a business major at the time. And she said, DNA sequencing, I just heard about it. It's like the coolest thing. Meanwhile, I didn't really know. I knew DNA, but I didn't really know DNA. But an internship opened up at this company on our job board, and it ended up being this company, Illumina, who's kind of the biggest player in the DNA sequencing space. So I was lucky to get in there. They took me under their wing and taught me all about genomics, from DNA, RNA, central dogma, through getting to work with cutting edge scientists in the oncology space, the microbiome space, synthetic biology. So it was kind of a roundabout way to get there. But so that's how I ended up there. And then the step from genomics to oral health is also not super intuitive. But me and my co-founder, Danny, we were both in the Bay Area working with a number of startups in the genomics space. And we were at a pitch competition, and I think we heard five or six companies all present on the gut microbiome. They were all essentially presenting like Viome's business model. And we were just sitting there, and I think it was either I had a dentist appointment or some recent dental experience. And I'm someone who every time I go has a new cavity. and we started talking and just were wondering, why isn't anybody looking at the oral microbiome? And as we dug in, we realized oral disease really stems from the oral microbiome. And it was one of those, why isn't anybody doing this? And so we just kept kicking the tires on it and eventually had a company around it.
I don't think that the link between oral health and chronic disease is well understood, or at least talked about as much as it should be, because there's a lot there. And every time you put something in your mouth, when you have gum disease or some area where your bloodstream is exposed to the food, it's potential for pathogens to enter circulation. And so it's one of those areas that I hadn't heard of until a couple of years ago, yet the tools around diagnostics and even prevention, they seem rudimentary for where we are for everything else around health and wellness.
I mean, you nailed it. Two big things. A, the connection to chronic diseases like Alzheimer's, diabetes, and heart disease, we're finally really understanding, you know, these are diseases of inflammation. And if you have chronic inflammation beginning in the mouth, either through gum disease or from the bacteria infecting your bloodstream and causing direct inflammation elsewhere, it's logical to assume there's an association there, and the data backs it up. But the tools, you know, you go in every 6 months if you're on it, or maybe less, and they look at it with an x-ray, and really all they're detecting often is the progressed form of disease. We look at, are your gums bleeding or are your gums swollen? And as you mentioned, we have the tools to look at the actual root causes of disease. And so it's only logical that we try to use them.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you were in a conference and you were hearing about the gut microbiome. What about like other microbiomes? We know that there's an oral microbiome. Do you know of like other parts of the body that have their own microbiomes or even microbiomes?
Yeah, that's a great question. The viome piece and like the virome world, I think we're just really uncovering. RNA sequencing technologies will teach us a lot there. Yeah. But in terms of the other microbiomes, it's really everywhere. I mean, the gut microbiome, I think, gets most of the screen time and most of the attention. The gut mind, the gut brain axis is getting a lot of research. And I think the data are pretty compelling there. There's the skin microbiome, where a lot of people have started focusing. Even if you start looking in the oncology space, there's a big area of research around tumor microenvironments and looking at how the microbiomes of tumors might be driving the aggression or progression of different cancers. I think we're really just scratching the surface in terms of the complexity of the microbiome and what we can really understand and start to influence.
Yeah. And I first heard about the gut microbiome with a V from Dr. Zach Bush. He talked about it in the context of the gut rather than the mouth or other area, other cavities. But do you know much about that? Why are we not able to sequence that and understand the microbiome yet?
Yeah. So I think we'll get there. The problem is viruses are very small. Their genome size is tiny. And in terms of relative abundance, you have way more bacteria. So when in DNA sequencing, essentially, what you're doing is you're chopping up all the DNA of all the bacteria and microorganisms you can find, and then reading all of it. So since they're a much smaller percentage of the total makeup, and because a lot of them are RNA-based and most technology has been DNA-focused lately, I think those are probably the biggest challenges. But as sequencing costs come down, it starts to make more sense, and you can get a bit creative with how you can isolate just the viruses, or people are starting to get there. So I think that's how we'll get there. But the biome space, I think, is fascinating because there's so many diseases that currently fall under autoimmune, or kind of we don't know how they come about, but it's very possible it might be due to endogenous viruses or other types of infections.
Yeah, and I've seen some theories out there that are speculating that potentially certain conditions can be caused by a virus being present and then it going latent, dormant, and then some other lifestyle factor triggering it to reemerge, and that being a causative factor behind the symptoms.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where these new genomics tools are so exciting. We've never been able to look at this before, and it's, a lot of things are measurement problems, but that's where I get excited about the tech.
When we were talking offline, you mentioned some staggering stats on just why oral health is such an important area to focus around disease and cavities and different things. Do you mind sharing those?
Yeah. And these were statistics that when we came across them, we almost couldn't believe. Oral diseases are the most common in the world. Over 90% of US adults have a cavity in their permanent teeth. Almost 47% have some form of gum disease. And as you dig into the relationship of gum disease to the overall systemic disease, you start to understand how big of a problem that is. And it's, I think we've just come to accept if you brush your teeth or you floss hard and you see some blood, you just kind of scoff at it. But, if I brushed my arm up on a table and it started bleeding, I'd probably be pretty concerned, especially now that we know these these pathogenic species that trigger gum disease, especially the anaerobic species of gum disease, they're being found in adverse pregnancy placental tissue. They're being found in ginger paint. So P. gingivalis, one of the big drivers, proteins, byproducts of P. gingivalis have been isolated from brain tissue from patients with Alzheimer's and mouse.
Is that gingivitis?
Yeah, so P. gingivalis, ginger, so ginger's up the gum. And so it's like that one you can kind of draw the connection to. But as you dig into this more and you read these statistics, you realize for some reason, oral health just exists as this other in healthcare. Mm-hmm. Your primary care physician can't do a lot for you there. You have a different insurance for some reason. It's really just kind of seen as this, oh yeah, I have a cavity, but it's like getting your car repaired. It's just like, oh, they're going to go drill it and fill it and we'll be good. But,
It's surprisingly isolated from the rest. I was thinking like for other parallels throughout the body and like the way the medical system treats it, but it seems that it's basically just like brain and body and the mouth are two separate categories.
It's so bizarre. We talk to people all about it, and I think that's so one area where we really see an opportunity is to help educate consumers of, because we're outsiders. And I think this does bring an opportunity of here's what we didn't know and here's how we've come to understand it. So we can help others have that same revelation.
How does the microbiome of your mouth compare to your nose?
That one I haven't dug into as much. I do know there are a lot of similarities when people dig in on some different studies. Compared to the gut, it's the second most complex and largest microbiome in the body. And I think what was fascinating for us is it's one of the most understood in terms of causal relationships to disease. So we've known for a long time that these pathogenic species will bring about oral disease. Certain bacteria like to hang out on your teeth. They form a home base and plaque, which you might hear as biofilm. And this makes them 1,000 times less susceptible to antibiotic agents and a lot harder to kill. So they'll hang out there and then they chew on the sugars and the carbohydrates and release acid that erodes your enamel. And then others just hide below your gum line and start triggering inflammation that way.
Are biofilms and plaque the same thing?
Yeah. So it's plaque. There's all these terms that float around. And I think we kind of, at least when I first started, I was like plaque, tartar, like what are all these different things? But essentially there are certain species that will take root on your teeth and start to form this biofilm. So as the biofilm hardens and these bacteria multiply, it'll start to develop into plaque. And then eventually that plaque hardens. And then that's where you'll see it referred to as like tartar or dental calculus. And that's when you go to the dentist and you feel them scraping things hard. It's because that plaque, it's so hard that you can't even remove it from traditional brushing.
I know there's biofilms in other parts of the body, like such as the nose, that's a common one. And different pathogens use them to hide out and escape detection and eradication by the immune system. But so I didn't realize that the plaque is a progression of a biofilm.
Exactly. Yeah. What's also interesting is it provides kind of this cover for these bacteria for the bacteria that cause cavities. And so you'll see a lot of that, but it can also get so dense that it reduces the oxygen levels to a point where these anaerobic species can actually grow and multiply. So when you start realizing, okay, anaerobic species cause gum disease, this plaque is a place for them to hide out and grow, it starts to make sense why you need that daily maintenance of removing the plaque before it gets to that level.
Yeah. Let's go into some of the things people can do to improve their oral care. Obviously there's toothbrushing and flossing, but like those are the rudimentary ones that everyone knows about. People may or may not know how to do it properly. What do you recommend if you were to create the dream oral care routine? What would be in it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, first off, starting from brushing and flossing. You know, we hear brush and floss more all the time, but I realized I was brushing incorrectly, and a study had found 9 out of 10 adults also were. So one tip you can do is turn your toothbrush at a 45 degree angle towards your gums, so that when you're brushing, you're actually getting some of that gum line brushing as well. So helping remove some of those anaerobes. Flossing as well. I hated flossing because it would make my gums bleed, which was probably a byproduct of me having some early gum disease. But what I realized is you're actually supposed to cut the string around the tooth, so around here, instead of pressing it down hard on the gums. Mm-hmm. So what you're really doing is just going along the sides and removing that biofilm that's developing between the teeth. So that's one start, is actually doing it.
Do you have a preference? Do you like to floss before you brush or vice versa?
I like to floss before I brush. I think the research, I don't know that there's a massive difference. I think if you're flossing, that's great.
In my unscientific opinion, if you floss first, then you remove the food particle, and then your toothbrush can pass over that area that was previously covered by the food particle. Not scientific at all, but that's just my observation.
That checks out to me.
One other question about brushing. I know that if you talk to certain dentists, they'll tell you hard bristles, soft bristles, electric toothbrush, manual toothbrush. Where do you fall in those camps?
Yeah. So from what I've dug into, I don't really see everything I read on hard bristle toothbrushes that's really made for like cleaning the rims on your car. so typically soft bristles, the way to go. And the reason is the enamel in your teeth, to remove the bacteria, you actually don't need that much force typically. Mm. And when you start going too hard, you can actually start to remove some of the enamel. Ooh. And that's bad because enamel doesn't come back. Yeah. And this is, I think, another point of confusion, or something that a lot of folks I've spoken to didn't realize, is if you brush too soon after eating, you can actually be doing more damage to your enamel. So when you eat foods, especially things that are acidic, carbs, sugars, or drinking coffee, the enamel actually softens due to the acid levels kind of raising or lowering the pH. So you're supposed to wait about 30 minutes or so you can rebalance the pH and it can reharden, and then you can go in and brush. But a bit counterintuitive on that one.
That happens within about 30 minutes?
That's typically what people advise, is wait about 30 minutes. I think if you're doing like a mouth rinse with water after, or using some some sugar-free chewing gum or chewing gum with xylitol, that can all help stimulate saliva and raise the pH. Maybe it'll be sooner, but essentially you want to try to get that pH of the mouth pretty even before you go in and start scrubbing your teeth.
Do your typical mouthwashes alter the microbiome composition of the mouth?
Yeah, so certain ones do. There's been some pretty broad spectrum mouth rinses, if you've ever heard of chlorhexidine or some that are very alcoholic. And you know, what we've realized as we've come to study the oral microbiome is most of the bacteria are doing good things there. They're helping fend off infection, they can help with digestion and actually producing vitamins. So this broad spectrum approach, I think, as we've realized with antibiotics in the gut and elsewhere, you know, I think we should try to be a bit more selective of taking things out.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Like, it's a strong parallel between how we used to just pop antibiotics, and then we realized that we need to be more discriminate about what we target. And then we're still doing the same thing by taking certain oral products that kill not everything, but a large swath of the oral microbiome.
Yeah. I mean, you nailed it. What we see with Bristol and kind of the opportunity in oral health is it just seems like it's a few years behind what we've realized elsewhere. And so we're excited about what the future holds for oral health, both for us and I think just general knowledge in terms of, you know, let's not use these broad spectrum killing approaches. Let's work with the bodily systems and look for things that actually work.
When I was studying an ancient Indian system called Ayurveda, they mention oil pulling and using neem and these certain like herbs that have more targeted antimicrobial actions. And I've looked into the research in PubMed a little bit, and there's some conflicting stuff, but some of the meta-analyses are showing that it's a good adjunct. It's not going to replace brushing or flossing, but it's with coconut oil particularly. And also I saw one that we mentioned sunflower oil, and then in the traditional Ayurvedic text for certain people, they recommend sesame seed oil. Mm-hmm. What's your experience around oil pulling, if any?
Yeah. So, I mean, my research paralleled yours essentially. So, there's a lot of anecdotal stories of people seeing good results with whitening or feeling healthier, which is awesome. But in all the trials, it seems like it may be good as an adjunct, the tool to use, but unfortunately it's not the panacea to replace brushing and flossing. I'm still stuck with that.
Have you found anything else that's closer to the panacea?
Not yet. There's some exciting trends coming down with arginine toothpaste. I think you'll start to see a lot of people going towards that. There's some research that it may inhibit plaque formation, so the development of biofilms actually sticking to your teeth. It's still early days, but I know there's a lot of excitement in the industry around that. So again, not a panacea, but progress towards finding things that are actually more effective.
Would that be because it increases something called nitric oxide?
It's possible. I haven't dug into the mechanisms, unfortunately, so I'll plead the fifth there. But but yeah, that's just one thing that I'm excited about.
And you mentioned xylitol gum earlier.
Yeah, so xylitol is a really interesting development that people have been digging into. So it's essentially a sugar alcohol substitute. And what they found is that unlike most sugars that these bacteria will break down, the pathogenic bacteria, they can't actually break down the xylitol sugars. And so what ends up happening is they just can't and they die. So you'll start to see, or what I've started seeing, is xylitol being used as a sugar substitute in a lot of products. And there's actually some really interesting data around expectant mothers and parents, where if they're cavity prone, but start implementing xylitol chewing gum or some other xylitol interventions late stage pregnancy, they'll see a reduction in early childhood cavities in their children in studies. So there's something interesting going on there.
Yeah, with the sugar alcohol of all things too.
Yeah, exactly. And the other benefit, so with that and with if you're just chewing sugar-free chewing gum, saliva is actually one of the body's best defenses against oral pathogens. It has some antimicrobial agents, it can repair wounds, and it, you know, it has the benefit of just rinsing things out. So if you can chew like a chewing gum after dinner or after you're having some sugar or something acidic, you can help re-stimulate that saliva and reduce the amount of time that your enamel is exposed to a lower pH.
And the time I think it's most important to make sure you're having adequate saliva production is while you're sleeping. So I do something that's pretty extreme. And before I go to sleep, I get some mouth tape and put a little piece over my mouth, and I can still breathe through my mouth if I really tried. But the whole idea is that instead of waking up with a dry mouth, feeling groggy and fatigued like I used to, when I mouth tape, I wake up feeling refreshed and my mouth is like still moist. So I'm not going for 8 hours with a dry mouth, losing out on those benefits you just mentioned.
Exactly. And I think it's especially important because saliva production tends to decrease while we're asleep, both for the mouth breathing and I'm sure other reasons. But I will admit I haven't gotten myself to mouth tape yet, but I'm going to try it one of these days. it checks out logically.
Yeah,
I think it's a good point, though, on, you know, when we take different medications, people say dry mouth or things will give you dry mouth. And so often we just kind of like, we're like, okay, whatever, like I'll just do something else or I'll just have dry mouth. But, you know, when you understand saliva plays a key role in cavity reduction and in preventing some of these pathogenic species, we should start to see more implementation. Like I have a xylitol mouth spray that I know if I have a dry mouth, I'll spray that in. There are different things that can help stimulate saliva. And I'd love to see medications that are giving you dry mouth start to be paired with agents that can actually help.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. There's a lot of these side effects of certain drugs, medications, lifestyle practices that I kind of just brush off as being, okay, like, sure, dry mouth, I'll drink some water, no big deal. But then the more I learn about these different systems, I realize that it might seem small. Mm-hmm. The oral microbiome might not seem important, but there's probably a lot there that we don't yet understand. And as we learn more about it, we're realizing that it's more important than we could have possibly imagined.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Pre-genomics and pre kind of getting into health, I think that was, I had a very simplistic view of the body and sort of how things worked. I assumed most things just healed and, you know, the body just kind of kept on. But, you know, as you really dig in and start to understand, this is a complicated system and it's all connected. You really start to be more conscientious of what you're putting into your body and how it's all working.
I've been doing a deep dive on genomics myself recently and looking at a bunch of different companies in the space. I'm a big fan of one called Self Decode. They analyze your genetics and they have like a database of 8 million S&Ps at this point. And they also can break down like their recommendations and their blog content based upon your genes to say like, there's this new research, but, and they actually go a step farther and interpret it for you saying like, you could implement this, but it's probably more impactful if you do this instead.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, just the way we're going to start to be able to understand ourselves and how we're different from one another, and why something that works for one person doesn't work for us. You know, it's just going to uncover this whole new way of managing our health. And personalized medicine is I think, the first instance of this where we'll start to see more improved cancer therapies and more improved treatments based on what works for our body. But then taking it the next step of personalized everything, you know, personalized nutrition, personalized exercise programs, everything that actually is made based on your genetic makeup.
Yeah. My biggest interest is the combination of personalized health, fitness, and performance and technology. So because that's my interest, talk to me more about Bristle. Like, how does it work? Give me some of the science behind it.
Yeah. I love this question. So what we do is we use a technology called shotgun sequencing. So traditionally, a lot of microbiology approaches and microbiome tests, what they do is they'll look at a handful of the bacteria. So they'll use a technology called qPCR, which looks at essentially snippets of some of these bacteria and can tell you presence, absence, and quantity. You know, think 12, 20 species, or 16S, which is a step further, but you're only looking at one gene of the bacteria. And so you miss some of that deeper information. What we use is shotgun. So as the name implies, we just shoot everything. We look at all of the, so we look at the whole genome of essentially every species that's there. And what we're excited about with that is, A, we can look at the relative abundance of these probiotic species versus these pathogenic species, which is really the state of oral disease is largely based on dysbiosis. So the imbalance of, that these fall out of. The other piece is we can start to, as we do more research, uncover the metabolic systems of, since we'll have the whole genomes, how are these metabolic pathways working across the microbiome? So if this bacteria is breaking this compound down into this, and then this bacteria down into this, we can really start to understand sort of how the whole system's connected. And then the on the back end, start to understand, okay, how can we better target just these pathogenic species? So moving as far away from these broad spectrum approaches as we can to something hyper-personalized there. But the way Bristle works today is we do the shotgun sequencing. We give you a report of your oral health score. So gum disease, cavities, halitosis, sort of just a score based on your abundance, and then give you a breakdown of the levels of different species and a little descriptor of what the research says about that species. And, you know, if you want to go and nerd out like I do, we'll point you towards resources where you can go and start to understand how are they affecting other systems, and then match you with treatments, as I mentioned.
Why wouldn't every company in the space use shotgun sequencing? It seems like it's light years ahead of the other options.
I agree. It's expensive traditionally. So we have done some innovation on our test to bring down the cost. But traditionally, that's been sort of the biggest hindrance is cost. But from day one, you know, we were very intent that we were going to do it with a shotgun sequencing approach because we believe it's the most accurate and comprehensive. But yeah, sequencing costs will continue to come down. We've watched it over the last 10 years. I think we'll continue to see it. So hopefully we'll see everyone move over there.
So in my gut microbiome right now, I have plenty of pathogenic organisms, bacteria, viruses, but they're kept in check by the communities of positive bacteria and viruses. And because of that, I don't have the symptoms of, say, E. coli. Mm-hmm. How do you know that having colonies of certain bacteria in the mouth is going to be detrimental to the extent of where, like, I'll have tooth decay or something rather than just being kept in check by the other, like, opposing bacteria?
Yeah. So part of it is based off studies we've run. So we had a partnership with the University of Pacific School of Dentistry where they would do an actual inspection on patients who came into their clinic. And so we'd get the paired records of if this patient had gum disease versus if they had a lower stage of gum disease or cavities. And then we could match the actual microbiome data with the disease signatures. So we've done a lot of that on our end. But I think it's a good point you bring up that just because certain bacteria are there doesn't mean that you have the disease. It could mean that it's earlier stage, or it could mean just that your immune system or however the interplay is there might be impacting it. But that's why we believe looking at the relative abundance is really the way to go. So if we can see, you know, the oral microbiome communities have much more skewed towards these pathogenic species, we can start to infer from that that you don't have as many of the probiotic species keeping it in check. So really about like what's the community makeup versus is this bacteria there or not?
Okay, and that's back to the benefits of shotgun sequencing.
Exactly, yeah.
Once someone has the results from Bristle Health, what do you guys do from there?
Two different options. You can do sort of a one-time test where you get your report and you can see sort of your status and measurement and get your treatments. Or you could do a subscription, which we offer, where every 6 months or every 3 months, you'll get another test shipped to you and you can track how your oral microbiome is progressing over time. As eventually we want to get to the point where we can do more intensive coaching in terms of recommendations and check-ins. And I think that's where we'll get to. But today it'll be, essentially access to the team and to some dental professionals we're bringing on board in case you have questions. And I think what we're most excited for is that ability to track over time. Cause you know, oral health today, I can go and implement a change and then I'll just see if I have a cavity the next time. But there's no real quantifiable metric to see what's being impacted or what's working or what's not. And I think that's something we're really excited for is giving people the ability to understand, okay, this is what was driving my disease and this is what changed when I did it. which I think will encourage more adherence to oral hygiene and just better decision-making.
Definitely. But like, yeah. What kinds of recommendations do you give? Obviously, brushing your teeth more thoroughly is going to help, and same with flossing to an extent. But do you guys give more customized recommendations than that?
Yeah. So we're really trying to get past just brush and floss more and avoid sugar. So we want to give some advice in terms of if you are at a high caries risk, or in high cavities risk, maybe these types of products will be most effective for you.
These types of products being?
Like 5,000 ppm fluoride toothpaste. So a higher fluoride toothpaste for people at a high cavities risk for some time will reduce their cavity incidence. Or maybe you go with a mouthwash that's more focused on fluoride, or if you're not into fluoride, looking at some other alternatives that are more focused on these cavity causing species, versus if you are more prone to gum disease, you know, that's where you might want to consider something like a water pick on the product side, or some other flossing alternatives if that's not going to work for you. But the other piece is really around diet. So some of the things we mentioned in terms of if you have a sweet tooth like me and you're going to eat sugar, you know, try to do it this time of day, or try to do it in this type of setting. Or if you're going to work on your diet, you know, start to look for more cruciferous vegetables or different things that we've seen work better with the oral microbiome. So really just trying to get a bit more education than brush, floss, and avoid sugar, because, you know, people like sugar and brush, and just being told to do that more and more and more doesn't really do anything.
Do you have any good alternatives, like other ingredients or substitutes you can use if you don't want to have fluoridated toothpaste?
Yeah. So one of them I mentioned, the arginine, I think that is probably one of the good go-tos. Another one is nanohydroxyapatite. So fluoride is one of the building blocks of your enamel. And the other one is nanohydroxyapatite. So that's another area of research that I think you'll start to see more products implementing there. Just sort of using that as a different building block, because I do know people have their reservations around fluoride.
The stuff that makes its way into toothpaste is byproduct of like industrial manufacturing. And I'm curious if there's like a bioidentical fluoride, more like identical to the fluoride you need to build strong enamel.
It's a great question. That's something I haven't done research into, but I think we might need to have a longer conversation around how we can find that.
It's kind of like the idea that vitamin C is more than ascorbic acid. If you look at it, like whole foods based vitamin C molecules under a microscope, it looks different. So I'm curious, I feel like if it's not there already, maybe some smaller name brands are producing it. I'm not sure.
I think it's a good point to dig into. Mostly, I mean, my thinking around fluoride has just been around clinical trials and just looking at the outcomes of toxicity in different measurements. So we'll see what comes of it. But, I think anytime we can try to get more close to the actual biological molecule, the better. So I think that's a good.
Okay, well, Brian, let's start winding down. Before we do, what are you interested in and researching these days?
Yeah, so I think beyond bristle, which takes up a lot of my time in terms of the connections between oral systemic connections, synthetic biology is just the coolest field to me. Companies like Ginkgo Bioworks or others that are using biological systems and modifying E. coli and other bacteria for manufacturing purposes, or manufacturing companies like Synthigo, who are doing broad spectrum CRISPR and making new cell systems for therapeutics or other applications. It just feels like the coolest, most futuristic tech in terms of we're actually engineering systems that have been developed over, you know, millennia. So I always think when you can just use the tools nature gives you, it seems like a good option.
Yeah, it's a very cutting edge field. And there's some people in the biohacking movement that are more extreme, and they will like use CRISPR to modify their own genes. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. It seems far too risky to me, but some people are already doing it.
Yeah, I think I would err with you. There's, you know, with any new technology, there's just so much we don't understand in terms of off-target effects or specificity of these edits, and really even how to make sure we're applying them to the right places. You know, you might want to edit a gene out of one system, but as we've talked about, your bloodstream is connected to everything. So you don't want it to go over and, you know, cause cancer somewhere else or trigger something that you really don't want to bump.
And I feel like the people that are the very top, the highest up in their profession around synthetic biology realize that more than people below them, that there's more that we don't know than we do know.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think for a while there was, you know, there was some controversy a few years ago. There was a study of where somebody actually had tried to perform CRISPR on embryos, and there was a whole moratorium effort of like founders of CRISPR saying, please do not do this. You know, we don't understand it well enough, but you know, with time, I think we'll do more research and get to the point where we can do some really cool things.
Baby steps, and eventually we'll be there.
Exactly. Yeah. Before we're eating, you know, CRISPR pills, we should make
it work. Well, Brian, before we go on to the last couple of questions, if people want to reach out, connect with you on the internet, find Bristle, how do they go about that?
Yeah. So we're at bristlehealth.com. You can find a number of ways to connect with us there. Info@bristlehealth if you have any general questions. I'm on Twitter at @BrianMauer_, because Brian Maurer was taken. Or Brian@bristlehealth. If you have any questions, I'm always happy to answer directly as well.
Perfect. I haven't tried your kit yet, but I'm excited to once it's released.
Yeah. We'll have to get you set up with one.
Yeah. All right. Let's go on to the final questions. Are you ready?
Yep.
Imagine that you had a virtual board of directors and you have to run all your most important life decisions through them. Who would be on your virtual board of directors and why?
Yeah, this is a great question. When I think through this, I break it down into like my professional board, my personal board, and then just my life anything questions. Mm. On the professional, I'd probably go with Paul Graham. He's the founder of Y Combinator. He's just got a brilliant way of thinking. And Shane Parrish from Farnham Street. If you're familiar, fs.blog. The way he thinks and approaches systems, I realize I could learn a ton. Mm-hmm. Personal, first is David Goggins. He just has the ability in his writing and podcasts. Every time I listen, I'm just like, I need to go do more. I need to go be better than I'm being today. And that's inspiring. Another one's Anthony Bourdain. And in a similar vein, Maya Angelou, just people who really seized life and really just lived the hell out of it. And I think among those three, it'll make sure that anything I'm doing in my personal life, I'm doing as far as I can, and I'm really taking it.
Yeah, you're set.
Yeah. And then just general, this is a sappy answer, but my mom, she's just like one of the smartest people. She's guided me on every decision so far. So I need to keep her around too.
You're not alone. That's actually been the most common answer.
I believe it. Yeah.
Okay. We'll go down a similar vein. And if all knowledge on earth is gone, but you get to save three works, they can be books, podcasts, YouTube videos, any form of content, what would you choose and why?
Yeah, I was telling you offline, this is a really good question and something that keeps me up at night having to figure it out. But here's what I'll settle on. So one is A Short History of Nearly Everything by Bill Bryson. It's just a delightful run through of pretty much every discipline of science, and does it in a lighthearted and fun way. So I'd keep that around so we can keep some sort of record of what's happened and where everything stands. Another one is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. This is more of just a personal pick, but it's just so delightfully silly and explorative of different perspectives and kind of the, I guess, just the craziness and wildness of life, which I appreciate. And another one, personal pick, is the In Color album by Jamie XX. I'm a huge music head. He's my favorite artist, and I think I would just go crazy if I didn't have access to some Jamie.
It's funny. This has been the first interview where I've known every single answer to the last two questions. I actually saw Jamie XX live last week or 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How was it?
It was really fun.
Yeah. He's just spectacular. I think he's like one of the greatest music minds alive, but don't get me started on that.
That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to a quick rapid fire round before we end.
Let's do it.
What's the number one thing you've changed your mind on in the last year?
The number one thing I've changed my mind on is trying to read a lot for the sake of reading a lot of books. I think there's kind of this vanity metric of how many books you read. And I was really stuck on that. And then I just kind of came around after reading a lot of Shane Parrish and other folks that if you're not enjoying a book, put it down and find one that's actually giving you benefit and making you better. So I've really tried to go for quality over quantity on that front.
Over here, we were just talking about that this morning, whether you go for the number or you really study each book and get to know it intimately before moving on.
Yeah. And, you know, different strokes for different folks. I know some people like to have just a wide breadth of knowledge of a ton of different things. And for them, that's great. But, you know, with reading, I really wanted to make it something. It didn't come naturally to me. So I needed to find outlets that really spoke to me.
Yeah. I like to take a hybrid of both of those and have a wide breadth of knowledge and then find the certain things that I find interesting and then read over it with a fine tooth comb and really like think and analyze each line.
I love that. That's a great approach.
All right. One more before we conclude. What's one thing that your tribe doesn't know about you?
It's probably how much guilty pleasure music I listen to. I know like every word to more Halsey songs than I think a lot of people would and others. So that's Spotify top 100 might expose me one of these days, but for now, that's what I've got.
I'll have to come visit you in the office and see which of the Spotify top 100 you have on.
Yeah, please do.
Test your knowledge of all the lyrics.
I'll look forward to it.
Okay, Brian, well, how would you like to conclude our episode together tonight?
Well, it's been so great talking to you. I did have a question for you. I don't know if you're going to have an answer for it off the top of your head, but I think I'll make it a little easier. What has been the biggest learning you've had from running this podcast?
It's cliche, but I've learned how important communication is when things don't go as planned, to proactively reach out and to know that by taking it on, you're accepting a certain level of like flexibility and at the same time rigidity in your schedule, so that when you have things in your calendar for certain days, it might be the weekend, it's up to you to not go out late at night partying so that you show up the next day. Little things like that. And then also at the same time, a completely separate thing I learned is how important it is to be curious and willing to learn, because you have to figure out, if you don't have the resources to hire a big team, you have to figure out how to record the podcast, edit the podcast, create the website, host the website, edit the video, combine, mix, master everything. And all of a sudden, what seems like it's simple, you have a new appreciation for everything you listen and watch.
I love it. That's a great answer.
Well, thank you so much for your time tonight. It's been fun getting to know you, Bristle, learning about the myths, misconceptions, and tips you have around oral health. And I'm looking forward to seeing where you guys go from here.
Thanks so much. It was really awesome talking to you. Such a fun conversation. And we'll be along on the ride together.
Yeah. I'm Nick Urban here with Brian Maurer tonight, signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week.
Okay. As promised, I'm going to now cover the results of my Bristle Health report. This is best demonstrated visually, but I'll give it a shot over audio. First, you have several categories, each with a score between 0 and 10, 0 being low and 10 being high. The first category is beneficial bacteria. I scored a 1.5 out of 10, which puts me in the low zone. If I have to speculate on why I have low amounts of beneficial bacteria in my mouth, it would probably be because I use essential oils when I oil pull and different things that can kill microbes in general, both good and bad. Then it shows how I compare to the healthy population, which I'm much lower. After that, it talks about specific bacteria related to good oral health, and you can click through the different tabs to see what you're high in, what you're medium in, what you're low in, and what wasn't detected. The next section is tooth decay. I scored a 0 out of 10 with the status of undetected. Well, that's good news. Up next was gum inflammation, and there I got a 2.6 out of 10. With the status of low, and the graph below shows how I stack up compared to healthy people and also people with gum inflammation. Under the specific bacteria section, I had nothing in the high category, but a couple under the medium, low, and undetected. I cannot pronounce the name, but it gives a nice detailed description underneath of what it is, what causes it, and the risks associated with having too much of that bacteria in my mouth. All right, the next category after that is gut inflammation. And my score here was off the charts. I got a 9.9 out of 10. With the status of high and under the bacteria related to gut inflammation, there are two listed there. This time there's none in the medium tab, a couple in the low tab, and a bunch in undetected. I don't find this surprising, as I recently read Dr. William Davis's book, Supergut, and discovered that I likely have gut dysbiosis, probably in the form of SIBO. I've actually just recently started an anti-SIBO protocol. But nonetheless, I found it interesting that Bristle can detect gut status via the oral microbiome. As of this recording, there's one other metric, and that's the bad breathometer, which, as the name implies, detects bacteria related to bad breath. I scored low here. The final two sections are their recommendations and the follow-up plan. The recommendations are about probiotics and other lifestyle habits and interventions you can do to improve your scores. And then the follow-up is what you should do, given your results, to improve your oral health. Overall, I'm impressed with this report, given that I'm just a beta user of theirs, and I look forward to seeing how their advice, recommendations, and the science behind them evolves over time. I also expect that dentists and other medical professionals will eventually adopt something like this to give much more thorough and tailored results. I hope you found that fascinating, and until next time, have a great week. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.